So this is Soccer Nomad Podcast, and on this episode, we're going to talk about Tottenham Hotspur. So Matt Gragg is my guest today. He is the Vice President of ATL Spurs. So Matt, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Good to be here after a day like today.
Yeah, so we just got done watching Tottenham Hotspur against Manchester City. Big win for Spurs. 2-0. Quick thoughts on the match.
I thought we were fantastic. I'm so pleased with today's match. I thought at the beginning of the season we were like struggling, but we still were getting results, so I couldn't complain too much. Today I thought we were the better team for the vast majority of the game. I was very impressed. Very, very happy. And now sitting alone in second doesn't sound that great, but 1 point off City, that's a good place to be at this point in the season.
Yep, so thoughts on the team? You know, you had a couple transfers come in, a couple people went out, that sort of thing.
Knowing how Poch works, I feel like it takes players a little time to adjust. They don't come in immediately and just make it work. The one exception being Wanyama, and that's because he's worked with Poch before. So, and he had pretty much the full offseason. You know, he was there for all the matches, played all the preseason. So he was in good shape. Like Sissoko, he came after a preseason with Newcastle, which who knows how that really was. So he doesn't really look in form. You know, Nkudu, he didn't really, he was kind of training with us. That was a weird situation too. And then Janssen, he's 22. He's a really young guy. So it's going to be a big adjustment coming to the Premier League. But really, really happy with Wanyama. I thought, for example, I thought he's been really good for us the last couple weeks in Champions League and here. And he plays like all 90 minutes. He just seems tireless.
Right. So let's talk about ATL Spurs. It's the official Tottenham Hotspur Sports Club in Atlanta, Georgia. So how was the group formed?
It was sort of a mishmash of a bunch of different people. The main players were Matt Stigall, AJ Piplica, and Michael Constantino. They kind of went up to Baltimore when Spurs came and played Liverpool. God, was that 2009? 2010? I can't remember now. I didn't go to that, but I knew Matt Stigall, who actually sort of started Terminus Legion, too. So he happens to be a Spurs fan. And they went up there and saw all these groups and saw Baltimore Spurs and said, oh, this is cool. Then met other people from Atlanta and said, let's do the same thing. So Matt knew I was a Spurs fan, got me involved, and the four of us pretty much went to the Sandy Springs Meehan's for the very first game and sat down and watched the game together. And we were like, okay, this isn't quite fit. It's kind of far away. The bar's not a great bar to watch it. So we found another bar, Reross, over on the other side of Midtown, and we started meeting there. And the manager at the time is a Chelsea fan, so Chelsea was, you know, typically the main team, but if they weren't playing, they gave us the main screen. And it went from four guys to 10 to 13, and really the key to it was just always having at least one or two people there for every game. So every time we had people there, people would show up and be like, oh, Spurs fans, Spurs bar, and it just kept growing. After that first season, we found this bar, Meehan's, in Atlantic Station, and we made it our bar. You know, started putting up flags, putting up scarves, putting up signs, anything we could do to make it feel like a Spurs bar. And it's just grown every year. Every year we just get bigger and bigger, just because our presence, it gets to the point to where we don't even have to advertise. I mean, the first year I remember just really like plugging and putting stuff on Twitter and doing everything we could just to get, you know, we got 30 people, we got excited. Now we get 30 people at 6:45 a.m. to watch Hull. So it's really cool to see how it's grown. It's a lot of fun. We just have a really great time. But that's how it's built. And we have leadership. Michael's still the president. I'm the vice president. And we have a few other people that have joined on since then who are regulars. And
talk about the rest of the board real quick.
Well, we have Michael Constantino, as I mentioned before. He's our president. He's been there since the beginning. Me, I'm Matt Gragg. I'm the vice president. We have Larry Green. He's been here for 4 years. He is our treasurer. And then we have Beth Davis. She's been with us for the last three or four years now. She is our secretary. And am I missing someone? Oh, John Belfini. He works sort of dealing with charity and things like that.
So membership, talk about, you know, what, you know, you guys are part of ATL, you're part of Tottenham Hotspur, official supporters. Talk about what happens in the membership, what that gets you, that sort of thing.
So being part of the Tottenham Hotspur sort of official supporters group, you know, they give us a flag every year. We have pretty direct correspondence with the club. If someone wants to try to get a ticket to a game, there's a way to get into the ticket lottery, which is especially important this year. You know, if someone really wants to get in, we're able to, like, put something in to see if someone can get a ticket for the game. we just have a good connection with the club. They're really good about responding to us and letting us know what we can do and giving us any opportunities to grow the brand over here and like build the club up. And you know, when we made our own shirts, they were pretty cool. Like, yeah, we approve your logo, so they're pretty easy about that. You know, it's a really good back and forth. It doesn't feel like it's a distant relationship. We have a direct contact any week.
So how much is the membership? How do people sign up?
I mean, it's something like £40 or something like that for the whole year. And we just pay, I mean, from selling shirts or having jerseys, or if we just got to throw money in the pile from the leadership, we'll do it. We'll just pay the leadership dues or the membership dues. It's not really that pricey. It's just for the full year. We get the flag. We get a kit of some information. We got the I think we got a calendar this year that we're going to give away. Just stuff like that. Big thing is just that they're really communicative with us. That's the thing I like the most. I don't feel like, oh, we just put your name down on our little flag board and said you're a supporters group, and then there's like no communication. We have direct contact.
Okay, so you talked about community involvement. So we're talking about what you guys have done. You know.
So one thing that we've been a pretty regular participant in now for the last couple of years has been Soccer in the Streets does the Champions League tournament. So we have our Spurs team, and we've contributed to that. We've had some celebrity people show up, like we had Edgar Davids last year, and we had Steve Archibald, a classic player for Tottenham. And I think we also had from The Walking Dead play with us. Stephen Yeun was there too. But yeah, we try to do fundraising as a unit. So we have our own Facebook page, and we just go on there and we tell people, hey, you know, start contributing, see what you can give, and we try to meet, you know, whatever goals are there to raise as much money for Soccer in the Streets. It's a pretty cool charity. I really like it. This year, we're actually going to do Habitat for Humanity.
Okay.
So we're going to build a home here this fall, probably in November. Then we also have, we did this once before. We did the Angel Tree, giving gifts to kids during Christmas time. So John has worked pretty hard on that, getting in touch with different groups and seeing what we can do. And oddly enough, the guy who works for Habitat for Humanity in Atlanta is a Spurs fan, and we didn't even realize that. That's just, and he's like, yeah, I've been to your, we emailed him, and he said, yeah, I've been to the pub. That's great, you guys come. So it's funny how these things kind of just organically happen too. And I think we're going to do some stuff in the spring. We're not sure yet. I mean, we're always looking for different ideas and different opportunities to do charities and stuff like that.
Okay, so Spurs has been to the United States a couple times over the last couple years. Have you guys been able to go to the games, interact with other supporter groups?
So the most recent time we had some people who, it was kind of a limited game, that game in Colorado. I think it was like 19,000 or 20,000 could fit in that stadium for the All-Star game. But we did have some people who went to that. The easier game to go to, we actually went to the Chicago Fire game as a group. I think that was 2 years ago. I don't really remember when it was now. It feels like it was forever ago. But we went with probably a good 15 to 25 people, so a pretty healthy group there. And we had all our tickets aligned, and we went, and we really got excited because we saw the bar there in Chicago. They had set up their bar, they had the events there, they had the whole night before the game. Fans from all over the country, all over the world were there. We're meeting Ledley King, we're meeting Stephen Freud, and it was fantastic. And we got really excited at the thought of them coming to Atlanta and being able to do that, because our space is really conducive to have a lot of people. We have this, if you're not familiar with Meehan's Atlantic Station, there's a huge like thoroughfare right to the right of it where you could just gate it off if you wanted to, and we could just have a bunch of people out there. So we're pretty excited about the prospect of that. We're hoping Atlanta United, Darren Eales, being a former Tottenham man, has told us, like, you know, sort of elbowed us a little bit and said, yes, I think we could possibly get Tottenham here to play, you know, during the summer. So if that were to happen, I mean, we'd just be thrilled. I mean, it would be a great achievement for the club. I mean, we've had people from Australia here, people from, of course, England, and people from all over the world and all over the country who know about our bar now. So it just feels more and more like a family and a community. And you even see people come back. We had a guy who was with our bar and then went to Wisconsin, comes back, and he's just like, hey, I'm back. And it's a really cool community, and it's kind of fun to see it grow and take on a life of its own. There's other subgroups that keep building, because, you know, it's at the point now where I know the core, and I know some of the people on the outside. There's no way I can know. We have like 400 people on Facebook. who are members of our Facebook team. There's no way I could remember all those people. Don't have enough time.
Right. So let's talk about the club. I mean, it was formed in 1882. It was named, based on my research, it was named for Harry Hotspur.
Yeah, Harry Hotspur.
And that was, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. Talk about that real quick.
So, the club has a lot of cool little intricacies that is just kind of unique to itself. You know, people hear Spurs and they're immediately thinking, you know, San Antonio Spurs. For anyone who's ever just Googled Spurs, yeah, the first thing you're going to see is San Antonio Spurs. So when you put in a Hotspur, though, you're like, what the heck is a Hotspur? And then, you know, you find out that it's related to this guy who lived in the neighborhood at some point, and Shakespeare apparently sort of based him on some of his plays, or based this character in some of his plays in there. So it's got a lot of local. That's what's interesting about the club. You know, it's becoming this worldwide club, but so much of it is bred into that area. And somehow they've been able to maintain that. I think I love how the club sort of feels like the underdog a little bit. It feels like they're they're a real London club. And even though we're moving to become that worldwide club, I think it's really cool. But it still feels like when you're going there, it's in North London. It's a London club. It's got these old roots going way back. I mean, that's why we have the 1882 sign. I mean, that's just the date. It's been around that long. It's pretty cool. I love it for that.
So another thing that I found in my research is basically since 1950, they've been in the first division except for one season, which I mean, that's pretty impressive. And I was even more impressed by there was a 30-year period starting around the 60s where they won a league championship, six FA Cups, a Cup Winners' Cup, two UEFA Cups. They were the first British team to win a European competition.
Do the double.
The double. You know, we can talk about that in a little bit, but I mean, the double, I think, is a pretty historic achievement as well. But, you know, this club is, like you said, it's a London club with a lot of history and a lot of nuance. Sort of talk about how you found the club.
So, for myself, in 94, the World Cup was here in the United States, and I lived in Texas at the time. And in Dallas, they had a game where South Korea was playing Germany, and Klinsmann was on that team. He scored, if you probably Google Klinsmann's best goals, one of these goals is the goal from this game. He sort of flicks it up to himself and overhead kicks it in the net. I was like, wow, this player is awesome. It's amazing. I want to find out, you know, who does he play for? Where does he play? You know, at that time, I'm 13 years old, and you think, like, you only really know national soccer for a little bit, you know. And suddenly ESPN starts showing, what is it?
They used to show the Monday night games.
Showing those Monday night games, and you'd see Sheffield Wednesday and stuff like that. And then one time I saw that Klinsmann had joined Tottenham that summer, and he was a member of the club, and I was like, oh, well, then this is my team. Because I love this player. It's funny because he's become our national team coach. Never would have expected that. But I just loved watching him as a player when I could. And so I joined watching Tottenham from there, following it. You know, in the States from the late 90s into the 2000s, it was kind of hit or miss. You know, you'd watch Fox Sports World, you know, whatever channel happened to be playing a game. Once the internet came in, you kind of do some streaming and do whatever you had to do to get the game. It became easier. But since it's been on NBC like this, I think I love sports, but my fervor for Premier League and soccer has grown like 10 times because it's just so readily available. Might also do be, you know, having a professional career, having money to like choose my own, where my sports dollar goes and all these other things. So it's easier for me to access things like that. But for me, watching the club, I loved hearing the crowd. Crowds were fantastic, and that wasn't even a great time for the club. The late 90s were a dark period, but the crowd was still great, and it still had a lot of great, talented players there. I mean, Sheringham came back. We still won some cups. We were still fun to watch. Not all the time, but it just kept growing. And then, you know, since the ownership that bought the club, Levy and ENC and just what they've done, it's been fantastic. I mean, the club is at a place now that, I mean, that's what you were talking about earlier, the 60s and 70s, this great time, or even the early 80s when we had, we brought in Argentinians, we brought in these players that, people don't realize back then, England didn't really bring in international players. you know, it was all English guys. It was all people from the UK. It was all British players. So bringing in Ozzie Arguelles, bringing in Ricky Villa, changed the game. I mean, I wasn't around for that, but you naturally, when you become part of the club, it just becomes sort of part of it to find out about it.
Yep.
Because it has such a rich history and a deep history, and you want to know about these players. So I probably watched the Ricky Villa goal in the cup final 50,000 times at this point. And I get chills because it's like, that's Tottenham. And so it's cool to be a part of that. It's really, I think a lot of people say it's like college football fandom. I think that's the closest thing that we have in the States, is having that sort of, you know, I went to this school, this is what I'm a part of. And somehow I think professional football is able to bring that in the States. I think we feel that feeling because of the passion that people feel about a club, about a team. That's really, I kind of meandered there.
No,
but
no.
Really where it
well,
started
you,
from.
You touched on a couple of things. You talked to Klinsmann and Villa and that sort of thing. Where maybe your favorite games or players or moments for the club?
In the 2000s, I loved Robbie Keane. When Robbie Keane was first with our club, after he came back from Liverpool, he wasn't quite the same player, but when he played with us, he was fantastic. And some of the goals he scored, some of the things we won, I loved Robbie Keane. I thought he was the best. There's no doubt about Jermaine Defoe. I thought Sheringham, when I went 2002, sitting there streaming games when I could through the internet, I thought he was amazing. I mean, even though he left us, but then when he came back, he was still great.
Well, as a United fan, I thank you for Tay Sheringham, because not only did he deliver one of the greatest moments in soccer history, but for the club. Anyway.
Yes, I'm well-versed in that as well. The 99 year was quite a year. But yeah, Sheringham, I mean, besides Klinsmann, I mean, Klinsmann coming back to us too was fantastic, but pretty much I really love, and Ledley King, there's no doubt. I mean, that player was amazing. And then there was always some favorites, you know, just watching. I mean, when Berbatov was with us, it just felt like, again, another player we sold to United. And who had a great year with United. You're not getting Harry Kane. There's a lot of people who are like, so United's going to get Harry Kane, but I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's staying with us for as long as he plays the game or until his legs fall off.
Yeah, I mean, you talk the mid-2000s, I had a friend who was a Tottenham fan, so that was the second game I'd watch every weekend.
Okay.
And, you know, like you said, Defoe and Robbie Keane and Berbatov and Lennon and Michael Dawson and Steed Malbronk. You know, you just had, they were fun to watch. Now, they didn't win that much a lot, but they were fun to watch.
Well, they really, I mean, I thought Levy and the organizations had made a commitment to making the team better, to making the team and the club a world-class organization. And I think in the 90s, it sort of lost its way. It didn't transition well out of the Division One into the English game. Out of the English game into, like, where the world premiered. I think it had some adjustment period. You know, because if you think about before the Premier League was there, we're competing for the FA Cup. You know, Gaza, you know, all of these things that are going on with the club, and we had great players. Hoddle.
Lineker.
Amazing players that we had playing for us. And
Sol Campbell.
You're going to have to edit out Sol Campbell. That is not a name we ever need to mention. I think that the transition was difficult. I think we finally have found that place to transition into that world club. You know, some people will say, oh, they're building a stadium maybe 10 years too late, but I don't think so, because I think where we are and how we built the club, today's result speaks to it. I think we've got the right manager, we've got the right setup. It could go for a lot longer, maybe, you know, not Ferguson long, but it would surprise me for, you know, 6 to 8 years.
You mentioned the new stadium, so let's jump into that. You know, right now they're, you know, talk about what's going to look like, what's going to be involved, that sort of thing.
So I'm going in a month to London. I'm going to go to White Hart Lane and go to Wembley as well for a Champions League game. So I'm really excited about that, but I'm really also excited to be able to go and look and see where it's at this point. I mean, in this day and age with webcam videos, there's 4 different webcam videos that you can watch. And every time they bring in one of these, it's called a raker, that they bring in for the different steps for each of the seating, you know, everyone gets excited. You know, you start seeing photos, and it looks magnificent. I will say, I waited in anticipation for the video that shows the full stadium in the 3D look, because I don't know why, whether they don't do that in England, because I know for me, seeing the Atlanta United Stadium
absolutely
was awesome. You know, I love watching that. I saw that video and I was like, oh, that's really cool. How about we get something like that? We don't have that yet, but we do have a lot of plans. I mean, the single-tier stadium, the single-tier stand is really unique for Tottenham, because we haven't had something like that. You know, near 18,000, a little over 17,500 people in one stand. It's going to be, you know, the rowdy bunch. It's going to be the guys who sing. It's going to be those fans who are ready to engage. And I'm really looking forward to that. I can't wait to see the new stadium.
Yeah, so total capacity of, what, 61,000?
Yeah, around 61. You know, they debate, you know, 62, 63, whatever it wants to be. But it sounds like it's going to be 61. Based on our Champions League, like how many tickets we're selling for those, I don't think we're really going to have a problem filling a 61,000-person stadium. Don't know about those, you know, third-round Capital, it's not Capital One, but EFL Cup games,
right,
or
whatever they're calling it.
But I do think that, you know, when it comes to league games, I think we'll fill up that ground. There's been a lot of discussion about West Ham's new stadium and Arsenal at the Emirates and those different clubs where, you know, they don't have the atmosphere. You know, they don't have... Every time we play, you know, the scum at the Emirates, we outsing them. You know, we make more noise, unless they happen to be winning. But that hasn't happened for them in the last couple of years. So they're basically pretty quiet, and that can't be good, right? You know, that can't help the team. It does boost the team. You can see it when the crowd gets loud and gets into it. You see the team really get energized by that. And I think that they've been really thoughtful about bringing that element into the new stadium. I think White Hart Lane, of course, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, today you can hear the crowd. I mean, it's loud, and it gets the fans going into it. So I'm really, really thrilled about everything about the stadium, how it looks, how it's going to improve the neighborhood.
Right. Everything. I mean, it's going to be part. There's going to be shopping. There's going to be all this other stuff. It's going to host NFL games,
so
all that.
Where the White Hart Lane, like the other half of White Hart Lane, because the stadium kind of ends somewhere around midfield, and then beyond that, there's going to be like hotels and shopping and places for people to live and housing. It's very different how they're making the stadium there than how, like, Atlanta United, I see a little bit of that, but it's not near the extent of the cooperation that's going on there in London. And I don't know whether that's just a government thing that's just different in how their government operates, but hopefully, you know, that improves the area. I mean, everyone's been aware. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was fire, and we had to delay our first game against Everton because, you know, the neighborhood has its challenges. And I'm hoping that because of the size of the club, you know, people live in the neighborhood, you know, those top-tier seats don't have to be priced so much. Another thing I like is that they pay less to sit closer to this field, whereas you pay more if you're on the higher shelves. And I think that's a really interesting idea. Here in America, we do it opposite. Closer you are to the field, you're going to pay a premium. But then, of course, those fans that do that are not going to necessarily be the rowdy, loud bunch. They're all up in the rafters. So I'm often wondering, like, well, how would it be if, you know, the people that are right there at the front are all the people paying $40 instead of $150?
Right.
You know, it's I love that, too. It takes into consideration we want an atmosphere here. It's not just about making money. We want it to be entertaining and an atmosphere for the club and the team and everything.
So the transition part is kind of interesting. So they're playing the Champions League home games this year at Wembley, and it's my understanding they're playing the entire home schedule next year. Is that right?
Yeah. So all 17 matches, and I really don't know how they're going to do. It's going to be weird. I mean, a game like against Gillingham. If we have a third round EFL game in Wembley, I don't know if that's how they'll do it. I don't really know if they're going to try to ground share with someone else for those games. It just seems like that's a weird place to play, and you got like maybe 30,000 people at Wembley, or at best, to watch, you know, a League One team,
yep,
play our team. Now, it's only one game, but for sure we've got those 17 games there. Hopefully we're in Champions League again, and we're playing in Champions League next year there too. Don't really know how that works revenue-wise. I know it's really important that they do that and try to build the next part of the stadium over those next, you know, that next year. I mean, they're working furiously right now to get it up, but it's going to be really different. I mean, I'll be honest, a lot of the fans, we've talked about the red seats. and hence why at the two Champions League, or at the one Champions League game, everyone was wearing white. You know, it's just white out the whole stadium. And that's what we're going to do in the next two. I don't know if we can do that every single match. So it's going to be interesting. I'm curious to consider going to watch a league game there. Because it's typically known for the semifinal FA Cup matches, the final FA Cup. So it has a different vibe, you know. Or if it's an England match, it's all England. And even that's a different vibe. You know, you've got bands in there, and the band is playing their music, and they're singing the England chants, but that's it. You know, it's a weird atmosphere. It's a very different venue to watch the club. So in the Champions League, it's fine, because Champions League is special anyway. I don't know how that's going to impact. I'm glad we're doing Champions League here, but it's only three games. I mean, doing all 17, 19 matches there. Suddenly I've got MLS in my head, 34 matches a year. All 19 matches there. It'll be interesting. It's a different field size. You know, people have talked about the difficulty Arsenal had when they moved from Highbury, the difficulty that West Ham are having right now. So I don't know. I mean, you can train for it with the training pitch that's the size of that stadium and everything else. But so far, I mean, our first game there against Monaco wasn't that successful. So it does make me a little concerned for next season. But I think it's good preparation, because I think our field is going to be a similar size when we open the new stadium. So better off playing in that size for one whole year and getting used to it and adjusting. And I think that's partially the reason why we're signing all these players. We've signed everybody through 2020, 2021. I think there's talk today of Lloris, who's the only player who is not signed through at least 2019. I think there's only two players not signed through 2019. I think it's Lloris and Dembele. Everyone else is through 2020, 2021, or 2022. Now, as much as contracts aren't lock stock, we've got them. You know, you can always sell a player. I think that's a big reason why we're locked up those players out of that period, because the new stadium will be there for the next 3 years after. I think that's the vision of the club. I think that's what Levy's looking at.
Yep. So speaking of money, it's my understanding they're not going to name it the new White Hart Lane, but they're going to get some sort of sponsorship. Does that sound right? And how do you feel about that?
White Hart Lane is White Hart Lane. This is a new stadium. It's a new era. It's a new time. If you need to make that revenue, it makes sense. Now, if they decide to do something like the AT&T Stadium at White Hart Lane, that's fine. That sounds great to me. I don't know if they'll do that. Might not get as good of a deal if they do that. They probably just want to say, you know, the Verizon Stadium or whatever it happens to be. But yeah, I mean, you got to do it, right? You've got to compete financially. As far behind as we are, we just played a team that spent double what we spent this summer. We just played a team that their revenue is enormous compared to ours. Although ours has increased, I mean, every year we're getting more revenue, but the place where we're faltering is in White Hart Lane, you know, the revenue from game day operations. So a new stadium is going to change a lot of that. I mean, we're nearly doubling the size of people that can come to the game. But yeah, financially, I think it makes sense to have to give it a name. I mean, it's just smart business, and we're Spurs fans. They're going to do right by us. I have a feeling they're going to consider, hey, let's present some of these elements that are in White Hart Lane now in the new stadium. Definitely a consideration for those things.
One thing I like to explore on the Soccer Nomad podcast is kits. So okay. Are you happy with this year's kits?
You know, I really like them on the players. I don't know how they look on me. I really like last year's sort of racing stripe kit. It's awesome. I own that one. I love that kit. I'm a bad collector of kits. I'm not good. I love seeing them. I love the sort of old kits too. A lot of people were kind of frustrated by the away in our third kit, but I actually think those aren't so bad. I think those are really good, especially when you see some of these like weird fuchsia.
Yeah, the Nike Vapor Temple. Anyway, yes, there's a whole another. Those are. I mean, awesome. What City wore today is absolutely ridiculous, but.
I didn't even really notice what they were wearing today. What were they wearing today?
So it's black with the burgundy wine sleeves and the bright yellow socks.
Oh, it was that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm a little nervous because Nike is our jersey sponsor next year.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been under Under Armour for the last couple years, and they've done pretty well.
Yes, they have.
I thought last year's jersey was really great. The one before it had some nice features, but this year's looks really great in the players. It looks really nice.
So in preparation for this, I sort of dug around in the Spurs kit history. So they originally were navy blue shirts with white shorts,
mm-hmm.
opposite, and I found that really interesting. And then they switched to, if people are familiar with the Blackburn Rovers, sort of quartered, sort of a lighter, even lighter blue than maybe even Blackburn, but I was like, that was kind of interesting. And then they switched to red. There was one year where they wore red.
Yeah. Brief red.
And then, wait for it, chocolate and gold vertical stripes. When I saw that, that blew my mind. But it made now the gold this year. I'm not sure if they did that intentionally, but that kind of makes sense. But in like, where did I write it down here? So in the late 18th century, or late 19th century, beginning of 20th century, that's when they switched to the white shirt,
yes,
blue shorts, and ever since then, it's been almost, it has not changed.
Yes.
Which is very rare, because if you research other kits, other teams or kits kind of come and go, but the Tottenham's, like, sort of template has been over 100 years, which is kind of cool.
And that brings back to sort of what I was talking about, how it's like, it's a London club and has all this tradition. And again, I think that speaks to why they struggled to transition from the English league to becoming a world league, because it was more tradition. It was going to, you know, cockerel in the over your heart and white shirt. That's it. I mean, if you go back and look at the 70s kits, it's just the same thing every year. It's always with slight variations. Although the third kits or cup kits were fantastic. The one year we won in the yellow canary looking jersey as
right.
well. But yeah, I generally always, I would love to see just a straight white kit next year with just the cockerel. That would be amazing. Like I mean, obviously with the AIA in there, it's I don't know why AIA has to be red.
It's not, from a sponsorship perspective, it works. It's not as detracting as, say, Chevrolet on the Manchester United ones, or Visit Florida on the Fulham jerseys, if people have seen
that.
Oh,
yes, I remember.
There's the guys from Football Ag talked about a team that's got Spin and Win on theirs.
Right.
All these Chinese betting companies are a little ridiculous. But I wrote a post on the Soccer Nomad blog about the Tottenham away kit from the 2000-2001 season. It's the navy blue. It's Holston is the sponsor.
Oh, yeah, the Holston. Uh-huh.
With the stripes. I love that. I loved
the Holston
David,
jerseys were great.
They were great. I love David Ginola. Man, that guy
classic
was...
Classic player. He's amazing. Ginola was legendary.
Fantastic. He was great at Newcastle. He was great with Tottenham. That guy, I mean, talk about mercurial, dynamic, great hair. I love that guy. He was,
It's weird to see him now because he's got short hair.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's weird to see him do his interviews, and I'm like, but you can tell because the chin and the nose, it's yeah. still Ginola. It's still him, but yeah, he was a fantastic player.
So I saw one of the guys today rocking, I believe, I looked it up because his was the navy blue, white V-neck, had a 4 on the back. I'm pretty sure that's from the early 60s from the double year. That one I really liked. Do you have any of the old kits or old memorabilia?
As I said, I was really bad about collecting that. I do have a 7-inch of the Chaz and Dave Spurs are on their way to Wembley, and I got Archibald.
So explain to people what Chaz and Dave is.
Okay.
So FA Cup songs.
Chaz and Dave were this duo. Still this duo. Still play today. Kind of amazing to think about it. But back in the 80s, they wrote some great songs about Tottenham. Tottenham fans, of course. And they became chart hits there in England. And for our Champions... not our Champions League. Excuse me. Our FA Cup run. They wrote a song for the team. And they featured some of the players. They have a video out there. You can go on YouTube and see this video with Ozzy Ardiles uttering the famous line, "Win the cup for Tottenham," in his Argentinian English. And they did other Spurs songs too, and they became hits. And so I have this 7-inch of that song. On the back, it has all the players. I have Steve Archibald signed it. My goal when I go over is to find a way that as like, can I get? I'm gonna because I'm gonna take it with me, and I'm gonna see how many more signatures I can get. If I can get Ozzy's, I'd be so happy. But yeah, it's just a little 7-inch. It's really cool. I love it. I'm big into music in my own personal life, so it's the natural thing for me to get. I'm not a big. I have a bunch of scars, but I don't have a lot of kits or historical stuff like that. I have a lot of guys who are in the group that collect like the FA Cup kit or collect the double, basically the copper and white. There's not much else to it. I have a lot more people who have 80s and 90s jerseys too, because a lot of the expats that are here were kids then. And so when they were going to White Hart Lane, they were young, and those are the players they remember. They remember in the 90s watching the guys. And so they have a lot. There's a lot of 90s kits. I think we have a Mabbitt. Someone has a Mabbitt jersey hanging around somewhere. So there's a lot of different people in our group that have it. I am not as big into it. I like how they look, but I can only collect so many things.
Right.
So for me, the 7-inch is definitely a prized possession. I love it. We actually do have another expat that has who brought a Subedo board. Are you familiar with
Subudio? Yeah.
Subudio.
Yeah.
Board, and that was very cool.
So shameless plug for me is I'm part of the organizing committee for ATL SoccerCon, so we had a Subudio table set up.
Did you?
Yeah, it was amazing, and it was the hit of the, like, we had a line to play the entire time.
That's fantastic.
And we're hoping, like, so next year when we do it again, that I know a lot of people out there, and the more people that find out about it, the more people say, I have a Tottenham set, or Crystal Palace set, or Manchester United set.
Oh, that's
so
brilliant.
It would be great to get those sort of, like, the legitimate sets there, but yeah, Subudio is amazing.
I was also thrilled because, you know, we have our Facebook group. And so much of our interaction goes there, even though we have people who don't, not even on Facebook, just know about us, word of mouth. But, you know, there's a good over nearly 430 people on the group now. And we just posted a picture of this, and suddenly people from all over, like, went up into my parents' garage, and, like, they, like, pulled out their old playing board with the players and even a little, like, scoreboard. I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
So it really, again, that sort of sense of community and that sense of feeling like you belong to something that has roots. You know, for a lot of these people who have been over here for like 20 years, it just brings them back in these roots of like, ah, I remember when I was 6, this is what I wanted to play when I got off school.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to go play this game because that's what you wanted to do. So I really felt a deep connection when that happened. I thought that was really cool.
Awesome. So you've talked about social media a couple times. Let's wrap up with that. How can people find ATL Spurs?
Yeah, atlspurs.com is the website. And ATL Spurs at Twitter. And then we also have, if you're on Facebook, it is a private group. It's just easier to monitor and easier to deal with. Public groups always end up, people get added, and it just becomes a mess. But if you are a Spurs fan and you're listening and you're in Atlanta, or even if you're in we have people from South Carolina who are here today, Alabama, people who visit all the time, go and join us. We have people from other groups in other cities like Chicago and stuff who are part of our group, just to keep that connectivity. Yeah, those are pretty much the three different ways. We have AtlantaSpurs.com, AtlantaSpurs at Twitter, and the Facebook AtlantaSpurs Sports Group.
Okay, I'm going to put all that in the show notes. So this has been a great conversation. I just want to thank you, Matt, for joining me to talk about Spurs. So I wish you and ATL Spurs all the best.
Appreciate it.
Of course, unless you're playing Manchester United. But thanks again for coming on, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. It was a pleasure. Come on, you Spurs!
Thanks for listening to the Soccer Nomad podcast. Let me know what you think by commenting on the Podomatic page or giving the show a review and rating on iTunes. And help me spread the word by sharing this podcast with a fellow soccer fan. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974, and please visit my blog soccernomad.wordpress.com for posts on kits, memories, and more. Thanks again.